My journey into the lives of Rexnord factory workers began on election night of 2016 at Wellesley College, Hillary Clinton's alma mater. I'd been dispatched there to gather string for a story marking the historic election of the nation's first female president. I spent the day interviewing students as they cast their ballots, considering it a small coup when I found one who had lived in Hillary's old freshman dorm. In the gift shop, an army of Hillary Clinton action figures in plastic turquoise pantsuits stood at attention by the cash register. A coffee mug read, "Madam President, deal with it." Over the phone, I'd interviewed a 94-year-old Wisconsin woman who'd cast a ballot for Hillary from her hospital bed. I'd traded emails with a descendant of Elizabeth Cady Stanton. I texted a colleague who'd been dispatched to the Illinois town where Hillary Clinton had grown up. Other colleagues camped out at the Javits Center in New York, waiting for Hillary to give her victory speech. I considered heading home to my 6-month-old daughter, but a group of Wellesley alumni persuaded me to pop into the victory party. None of them had canvassed or phone banked for Hillary, but they'd all voted for her, and they'd bought their plane tickets 6 months earlier, along with thousands of other alumni who had trekked back to campus to mark the happy occasion. We headed across the grassy lawn, strewn with the bright leaves of November, to the field house, where circular tables draped with white tablecloths offered up ham and cheese spirals with goddess dressing. A woman with a nose ring wore a t-shirt that read, "Lord, give me the confidence of a mediocre white man." In the bleachers, another woman adjusted the strap of her homemade headpiece, which looked like a glass ceiling being smashed by a hammer. On the volleyball court, a male computer science professor gave a lecture on the historical significance of this night. "Just 100 years ago, women were picketing for the right to vote," he said. "Now students aren't going to aspire to be the first female president, but rather the next female president." The crowd applauded politely. From my seat in the bleachers, I spotted a square-jawed woman in a straw hat glancing at her smartphone. Her jaw dropped. That was the first clue. The professor scurried from the podium. The screen behind him turned back to CNN, which reported that Donald Trump was leading in Michigan, North Carolina, and Wisconsin. Anxiety gripped the room. Then a cheer rose up. Had they called Ohio? No, it was Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, another famous Wellesley grad, looming on a screen like a general in a sci-fi film. "I think we're going to pull this one off," she told the crowd. "Nothing comes easy for women." A short while later, the crowd let out a collective boo. Trump had won Ohio. A moment after, a chant began. 1, 9, 6, 9, Wellesley! Like a spell to ward off the inexplicable middle swath of the country. "Who's going to break the glass ceiling? Hillary! Who's our next commander-in-chief? Hillary!" Then the news broke that Trump had carried Florida. The voices of CNN reverberated from too many television screens. Monstrous, distorted, unintelligible. Everything liberal America had told itself about itself and the rest of the country seemed inside out and upside down. A woman breastfeeding near me looked shaken, as if she'd just witnessed a crime. A staff member from the college dragged the life-sized cardboard likenesses of Donald Trump and Mike Pence to the safety of the press room. "They're beginning to attack the cutouts," she explained. Out in the large hall, two prospective students in the bleachers, a dark-skinned girl in a hijab and an olive-skinned girl in a "Stop Harassing Muslims" sweatshirt, clutched each other in fear. "I think Trump is going to put us in a concentration camp," one said.